Carlton Browncast. This week we're shooting in a special location. We're at we're William Shatner's place, hanging out.
I know. It's a special location for chefs.
Yes.
Dogs.
Dogs.
And itinerant people.
And itinerant people.
Of which there are many here.
There's, the house is full of them, as far as we know. But we're going to make biscuits. We're going to make some biscuits and gravy. And then we're going to drink your hooch.
Wow.
Which is a pretty full morning.
Biscuits and gravy.
It's a southern thing. I don't know how much time you've spent down south.
A lot.
Have you?
Yeah.
You've done some shooting down there.
Shooting, but also I have a home in Kentucky.
That's the south.
Ride a lot of horses in Kentucky.
Absolutely.
Toured the south. I'm going to shoot a movie in the South next while. So I'm connected to the South.
Got it. And in Kentucky, you're connected to good bourbon then. Good water, good bourbon.
Good bourbon, yeah. Good bourbon beer.
Yes, beer. I like that. It's hard to find outside of Kentucky.
Lexington.
That's true. I got Lexington's pretty much ground zero for bourbon beer.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Well,
but why biscuits and gravy?
You know, biscuits and gravy... For some reason, if I knew I was going to be able to make one thing with you, I thought, well, number one, it's a Sunday morning. We can say that, can't we? And I've been in California for a while now, and I'm kind of hankering for a little south.
Oh, you're going to eat as well as...
I eat what I cook, mister.
That's the final test.
I don't have a plate, so I'm going to eat it out of the pan.
Can you imagine a chef saying, and here you are, I don't eat the stuff?
No, I don't eat it, I'm not going to serve it to you.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, this gets so it's my grandmother's recipes. Both of these are my grandmother's recipes, and she, you know, taught me this stuff when I was
okay. So now I'm finding it hard to grasp that a little kid of 6 years old is with his grandmother, and she says, "Alton, are you listening to me, Alton?"
No. She would just make. I would just sit and watch. See that? I think that one of the great things about spending a lot of time with grandparents and parents in kitchens is the passive teaching. You just watch them for years, and it's a funny thing. I never could get my grandmother's biscuits right. I tried for years and years and years until finally I was in my 30s, and I still couldn't get them right. And I sat down with her one day, and she was not going to be with us much longer. She was quite old, and I said, "You know what? I'm not going to take any notes. I'm not going to weigh anything. I'm not going to temp your oven. I'm just going to sit here and watch you like it's the first time." And she's like, okay. She thought it was the silliest thing in the world, right? And so she had this little dish up by her sink. And before she made biscuits, she would take her rings off. You know, her engagement ring and her wedding ring and another ring she wore. And I realized as she was doing this, she had very bad arthritis in both hands. And I was thinking about, well, this must be a really painful process for her. And I suddenly realized that when she made the biscuits and she needed the dough, because of her arthritis, she never bent her fingers. And that was the key to her biscuits. That was what I had missed. That's what I had not paid attention to.
And she didn't know.
No,
because her fingers were stiff.
Yeah, so she did it.
Her biscuits were different when she was young.
Yes, they actually were, but they got better as she got older.
That's what
she
I mean. Her fingers. The stiffer she got, the better her biscuits got.
I think that's kind of a funny thing, the harder, yes, that was absolutely true. I'm in that direction, but I wasn't. I think it's a fine direction to go in.
Right.
So that is why
what
I can now make her biscuits.
So define a good biscuit as against a bad biscuit.
Well, a good southern biscuit is light. It rises well in the oven. It should rise straight up. It should be brown on the outside. It should have some tang from buttermilk, which is what we're going to use today. But the real critical thing is the lift. And the lift is partly or greatly due to the kind of fat that you use. The kind of fat determines not only the flavor, but the way that that fat melts determines how that biscuit is going to rise.
So I would have thought it's the leavening.
Well, it is, but you know, leavening does not do it by itself, and neither does moisture. You want a moist dough because you get what's called steam rise, or what we call oven rise, from that moisture converting. But the way that the fat melts inside the layers of the biscuit has a lot to do with that
final
texture.
Well, a lot of people nowadays would say lard. Are you putting me on?
Lard. Leaf lard.
So wait a minute. This flies in the face of all modern
sensibilities. I'm not even sure this is legal in California.
Well, there you
go. What I'm holding in my hand may actually be illegal in California. This is legal.
We're trying to make it legal, but
I know you're trying. This was rendered. You raise a pig. This one was raised in the forest on acorns and roots. You kill that sucker, and this is from the fat around the internal organs. This is leaf lard, so it's a cleaner lard, and there's nothing else in it, which is why it's actually starting to melt at room temperature.
So where can you buy it?
Can't really, but you could use any lard. You could use a commercial lard that you could get in a grocery store, and it will work. It just won't be as good.
Well, what's your feeling about lard versus, say, butter?
You know what, butter
or coconut oil?
Okay, you've got to use a solid fat if you're making biscuits. You can, and I've tried it, but it's funny. All the biscuits taste like pina coladas. and I'm not knocking a pina colada.
But there's an ocean in between the south.
There's a big ocean. Right. I'm also using, this is a flour that I brought in. This is a soft winter wheat flour that's used by a lot of southern cooks called White Lily. And it's actually a self-rising flour. It's already got the leavener in it.
Can we get that?
Yes, you
can.
You can get that across the country. It's a little harder to find here, but you can get it on the internet. You can get anything on the internet. You can get good lard on the internet, too.
So, at times, do you recommend things that are difficult to get because they
provide... I try not to. We'll actually, before we do recipes on TV, we'll call up grocery stores in Omaha, Nebraska, or Spokane, Washington, or someplace up in Connecticut and say, do you have this? To make sure that it's something that's readily available. Now, you notice I'm just cutting this in with my fingers. I don't use any kind of tools for this.
It's all tactile.
It's very tactile.
While you're tactiling, tell me more about... what was your grandma's name? May?
May. Yeah, yeah.
Grandma May.
Ma May is what I call her. Ma May. Yeah, and she was a really good cook, but she was raised in that generation of cooks where they didn't think about it. It was something they had to do. You know, they weren't like, oh, we're into cooking. No, you were a wife and a mother, so you better make a damn pie or, you know, whatever.
But she was motivated making a damn pie good because her husband and her children would say, hey, May, this is really good.
No. In southern U.S., back in those days, it was more about the status in the community. Because you would become known for, oh, well, you know, this is a good coconut cake, but you know, it's not as good as Lucy's coconut cake. So it became ownership of something. And so you wanted to be good because it was a constant competition with the other wives.
So that would stand when they would have the fair or a cooking competition.
Yeah. Or church cover dinners.
Church
was the big one.
Church, where you lay all your dishes down on the on the church
table.
That's not
about God. That's about competition. that's about my cake versus your cake. And then eventually, you know, if you own lemon pound cake, well, nobody else in the town can even make one anymore because
really?
You want a lemon pound cake.
So
you got to come.
Everybody had their limitations and their area of expertise.
Yes, absolutely. My grandmother's area of expertise was blackberry pies, and nobody could mess with her on blackberries, and I know because I had to go out and pick them off of the side of the road. She had patches along the highway that I would have to go and pick the blackberries, which have big freaking thorns,
lead-filled,
by the way.
That wasn't too helpful.
My first close encounter with a rattlesnake, by the way, was picking blackberries.
Did your grandmother appreciate that? Or did she say, be careful, Elton?
She said, don't drop the bucket. is what she said. I make my biscuit dough pretty loose because I want there to be a fair amount of that rise we were talking about. So I use buttermilk. So there's nothing in here but lard, buttermilk, and self-rising flour. Yeah.
And how do you know that's all right? We got dogs here. That'll
clean
that
up. Saying your dogs will come clean up. If they were in here, this would already be clean.
How do you know how much to do the kneading?
It's a feel. It's completely tactile.
And what are you looking for?
It's completely tactile. I'm looking for a dough that's still sticky, but I want it to actually fold into layers. I need layers because I won't get a good clean rise if it's not in layers.
So it needs to be sticky
while you
make the layers.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll see it come together. And I've got to work very lightly because if I don't, I'm going to end up with massive club hands as this dough sticks. But I don't want to use any more flour than I have to. Now, notice I'm going to use my grandmother's empty hands. Fold, push out, fold, push out. Fold. I'm creating layers, which I'm going to need for the dough to be light and for the biscuits to be fluffy. Of course, with my luck, California will mess me up. But
did you have a lifelong love of your grandmother?
Yeah, we were really, really close.
More than your mother?
Yeah. And I think it's because my dad died when I was 10, and I ended up going and living with my grandparents, and it was a very formidable time. It was a very... kind of a critical time in my life. During 7th and 8th grade, and my grandmother and I bonded really, really seriously during that time. And the other thing is that she had a great sense of humor, which I very much appreciate in human beings, right up till when she died. And I don't think my mom's sense of humor is that good. All right, feel that. Give that a poke.
Well, how do I feel it?
Just like that.
Oh, yeah.
You see, it's soft, but it's not sticky
right,
at this point.
Yeah.
So
there's a give to it.
If we knead it anymore, we're going to start building gluten in the
dough. What happens when you knead it more? What happens?
If we knead it more, it's going to get tougher, and it won't rise as well.
I see.
So we don't want to work the dough any more than we absolutely necessarily have to. So
it sounds like a good way of approaching a job, actually.
Don't poke it too much.
No, don't work any more than you
have to. Don't work it any more than you absolutely have to. Well, you know what's funny is American cooks tend to want to work the heck out of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we think that if we work harder on it, it'll be better.
You're right.
So,
no pain, no gain.
Exactly. I use an aluminum. I only use this pan for biscuits.
And what do you get out of that?
It is a spun aluminum pan, and it's cured just right. I never wash it. And it seems like when I bake my biscuits in it, they're better. Hopefully today will not break that.
Did your father cook?
He did, but my father was far more adept at eating.
What did he do as a means of living?
When I was really young and we were living here, he was an account executive at NBC, which is how I met you once upon a time when I was a very young person. But when we moved back to Georgia, he and my mom owned and ran a radio station and a newspaper.
Really?
So we were media folk.
Owned the station and mm-hmm. Was he a broadcaster as well?
Yes.
So he was a performer.
What?
Well.
Yeah. All right, watch this. This is important. Biscuits want flat tops. You want flat tops on biscuits. You don't want them all bulbous. But the way that this dough rises, we have to do something to make sure that happens.
Flat tops on the biscuit itself.
Yes. I don't want them to go like, I don't want them to be domed. Thumb.
All right, so you've just spoiled the flat top.
No, I have not. I have established the flat top because as they rise, well, they're going to rise up more in the middle.
Okay. So
I just got flour on your sleeve. Sorry about that.
It's a good sign.
All right. Your new oven. We're yes. breaking in. I'm breaking in William Shatner's oven.
Hey, could things be worse?
Little too far. There, middle of the oven. So I'm going to figure that for about 12 minutes.
12?
Well, your oven's brand new. We don't know if it's calibrated properly. We're guessing. It's right out of the box.
Right.
It could be really 500.
Mean,
it could
mean
be not.
That you can recalibrate an oven?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, what you calibrate is the sensors that tell you what temperature it is.
So who recalibrates that?
Well, the people that made it will come and do that. Okay. But we don't know that it's wrong. We don't know that it's off. But sometimes when they're new, they can be.
You've got it at 500.
I got it at 500 because I want a quick burst of heat to start the rising process.
So you preheated the oven.
I did, yes.
You placed the pan open.
Yes.
So it has room to rise.
Yes. Absolutely. And I'm going to back off of that heat in a couple of minutes to about 450. Because if I leave it too hot, the biscuits will start to rise, but they'll set before they're done rising. And I don't want that. I want a good rise. So you've got to play a temperature game.
By setting, you mean they'll only go so high?
Yeah. What'll happen is the starch will start to set in the biscuit. They'll actually start to cook so much on the outside that the outer structure will keep the inner structure from poofing. So you got to be careful about that. So since this is an oven I haven't used before, I'm gambling on the 500. I think everything's going to be okay. I'm going to start the gravy.
Very good.
Sawmill gravy.
Right.
Which comes from...
Sawmill gravy.
Oddly enough, comes from... they used to make it in sawmills. It's one of those things.
Right.
And it's a sausage gravy with milk. It's thickened with milk and has a lot of pepper in it. And I'm going to actually add a few other spices to it today.
Now, while you're doing that...
Yes, sir.
Talk to me about your relationship with your father.
Well, he died when I was a kid, so I don't have as many memories of him as I probably should.
What was your feeling? How did you manage without a father? Here you are, a kid in Atlanta. You're part of a family group, and now suddenly you're missing.
I became obsessed.
The huge part of the family.
I became obsessed. I'm going to put a little more lard in here. I needed a father figure, and so I discovered old Humphrey Bogart movies. And so Humphrey Bogart was my dad.
Seriously?
Kind of. Yeah. I needed a role model, and I remember seeing the year that my dad died, I saw Casablanca. And I thought, that's what a guy ought to be. You know, he's got honor, friendship, this. And I became obsessed with watching old Humphrey Bogart movies and tried to emulate Humphrey Bogart. I haven't done a very good job.
Wait a minute. Have you done a stiff lip? Do the Humphrey Bogart.
Where stuff to do Bogart unless you got your cigarettes. I can't do it, but you got to have the cigarette.
Use the spatula.
That's more like a large
stogie.
Pie. I'm not doing it. You do him.
I can't do it.
I can't do him either. I can't. That voice is too difficult because you got to have like a.
You got to have a little sugar.
I'm not very good at being. No, I can't do it. So I'm cooking up some sauce.
Did you consciously think you needed a father figure?
No, I just did it. I didn't realize until years later that what I had done. That I was actually looking for a father figure.
And how good a father figure was Humphrey
Was Bogart?
Bogart?
Pretty good. Got the crap kicked out of me a few times by being a little mouthy, but you know, it was okay.
Did you act tough like him?
I tried to, yeah, but I generally acted tough around the wrong people. People who are a great deal larger than me.
Not a good idea. Humphrey Bogart never did that.
Well,
he had always had Claude Rains to kick around. Claude,
who's small? Who can't kick the crap out of Claude Rains, right? Yeah, I always chose bigger guys. I didn't have a Claude Rains figure. That's what I was missing. Or Sidney Greenstreet, somebody kind of fat and slow.
Right,
you know.
Yeah.
Or Peter Lorre. Easy to smack Peter Lorre.
Exactly. So now, talking about Sidney Greenstreet and all that weight, you dropped an enormous amount of poundage.
I dropped 50 pounds a few years ago, yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, I faced up to the fact that there's a direct correlation between what goes in here and what goes on here.
I thought you were going to talk about what goes out there, but
it was just a... it was a matter of kind of reckoning. I thought, you know, I know a lot about food. I should be able to fix this. I should be able to be fit using my, you know, what I know about food. And so I designed a diet that was based not on what I couldn't have, but what I had to have, what I had to eat every week. And so I had to eat a certain amount of oily fish every week. I had to eat a certain amount of green vegetables every week. I had to eat a certain amount of colored vegetables every week. I only got one dessert a week. And during the time that I was dieting, one alcoholic beverage a week. One.
Were you heavy as a kid?
I was what they call husky.
Right, but not 50 pounds husky.
No, I wasn't.
So
like...
So how did the 50 pounds go on?
The 50 pounds went on pretty much from having made, at that point, I'd been making the show Good Eats for about 10 years, and I'd put a lot of food in my face. And it just, it's slow, it's one of those things where all of a sudden you see yourself. I went to an editing room one day and saw this shot of myself in a bayou in Louisiana harvesting crawfish, and it was just from like my knees to my neck, and I didn't recognize myself. I was like, who's the big fat guy?
Right.
Oh crap, that would be me.
Right.
I wasn't very happy about that.
What are you doing right now, cooking?
I am sauteing up, I'm just rendering what we call rendering out some breakfast sausage.
You're rendering out, it means frying it up?
Meaning I'm getting the fat out of it.
Where did you get the sausage?
This sausage came from, Jamie, we get this at Whole Foods?
Yes.
Came from Whole Foods.
So the sausage came from a grocery store?
Yes.
You didn't make the sausage?
No, I didn't make the sausage. I'm sorry.
Do they make sausage?
I didn't have enough warning.
Do they make sausage in the South?
Oh, gosh, yes. Everybody's got a pig.
How do they do it?
Well, everybody, you know, traditionally in the South, in the rural South, everybody raises a pig in the spring and then slaughters it after first frost. And then everybody in the neighborhood helps make sausage. Like 80% of the carcass will go into making sausage for
so
use the rest of the year.
So the entrails are the
casings. You use the natural casings.
And then what do you put in it?
Usually you're grinding up shoulders, what we call the butt, because it was they used to be packaged.
Hold on a second. What's all that?
You'd like to have a on the other side of the burner.
Well, that's what I thought. Right.
Sorry about that. My bad.
Okay.
You're great.
All right. All right. Stop talking. So they make the sausage in the South?
Yes, make a lot of sausage.
And were you? Have you been part of it?
Yeah, I've killed a pig. I've killed pigs. I've scraped their hair off.
How did you kill them? What did you use to kill
them? If you're hardcore, you stick them,
and drain the blood.
Yeah, but you do it while they're alive, and it's not a very pleasant procedure. So most people in the South just shoot the things.
But they bleed then?
Boom. And you got to bleed them right away.
You got to bleed them right and save the blood for the blood sausage. Right?
Yes, especially if you're in Louisiana.
Where they eat a lot of blood sausage?
A fair amount, yeah. It's part of the Cajun cuisine,
but
certainly.
But the idea there is the peasant need to retain every value from the animal.
You can't waste anything, and it's disrespectful.
It's disrespectful to the animal, and the subsistence people that are killing the pig in order to live don't want to waste a foot,
anything.
A tail, an ear.
No, ears. My gosh, you eat those too. If you can eat every part of the animal, you're better
including
off,
including the blood.
Oh yeah,
which has a great deal of nutritional value.
I don't know if they use, you know, it's mostly used for its coagulant power, for the fact that the protein in it allows you to set sausage. It's more of a textural thing,
Why don't you look at that?
What?
Why aren't you looking at what you're doing? You got a really sharp knife, and your fingers are.
I don't need. I don't need to
talk about blood sausage. That's the way to do it.
Look, the when any professional chef will tell you that your left hand tells you where the blade goes. Your eyes
really?
Don't. Yeah. You don't need to look.
Do you have to learn that, or is that something?
You have to practice it a lot. That's for gosh darn sure.
There are plenty of people walking around. Grandma didn't do that.
Grandma did not do that. And grandma did not have a knife that could, you know, chop your arm off. You know what? They had the cheapest. Actually, you know what? My grandmother's knives came from a door-to-door salesman who sold knives. And I remember she had the same set of knives for like 30 years, and they were dull as dirt. And they every now and then my grandfather would like sharpen them on the grinder on the back of the can opener. You remember the electric can opener that had the grinding wheel on the back?
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible knives. Just terrible.
And what is the value of a knife?
The value of a knife.
Well, why do you need a really good quality knife?
That's a good question, because for somebody like me, I put a lot of emphasis and I put a lot of value in the size and shapes of cuts and the consistency of cuts, because you want things to cook a certain way. And so I want good knives in order to get those cuts.
To get a standard cut.
To get a standard, precise cut on something.
So that the meat is a particular
whatever
thickness?
Or yes. You know, it's like if I'm cutting a carrot to cook carrots, and it's one thing that they teach you when you train in French kitchens, you can only get consistency if everyone is exactly precisely the same
mass. I never
thought
of that.
It's got to be the same every time. I'm going to add some flour to this to start thickening up this gravy.
All right, now hold on a second. Pick it up and then hang up. Just hang up. That's it. Good. Thank you.
That's how you do it.
And if it happens again, do the same thing. All right. Consistency of
the cut, of the mass cut. Of the cut. Yes.
I never thought of that.
It's the hallmark of really good prep cooking. And certainly, the sharper your knives are, the better your butchery is going to be. If you're cutting up a chicken, you ever cut up a chicken with a dull knife?
I have.
It's not fun.
You know what I do?
What?
It's you have to
just rip it up.
Yeah. So you're not going to get consistency that way.
Well, it's going to look funky on a plate. It's going to look like one of your dogs, you know, kind of went at it.
That has happened on the plate. Right.
Has
in this
really?
Kitchen, a dog grabbed the Thanksgiving turkey, ran around the
table. You've actually had that happen? That doesn't just happen
God,
in a Christmas story.
I grabbed
story.
The turkey. There were people out there. I put the turkey back on the plate and went and served it.
I'm using cayenne instead of black pepper because I just feel like it.
Well, cayenne and south.
Yeah, but black pepper is the traditional spice for this gravy. I'm just... I don't
What's
want
to
that be traditional
to
today.
It?
It's going to make it
hot.
Yeah,
we're
going to
sweat
a little.
We're going to need a little powder.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe we could use some of the flour.
I have used some of the flour.
To take the glow off the...
Nope. The fat in the milk is going to do that.
All right, so you didn't put any... I was thinking the meat is sticking to the...
I want that.
Why?
I want that because those brown bits that form on the bottom of the pan from the meat sticking, that's flavor that you cannot get any other way. The French call that fond, F-O-N-D. It is the foundation.
That.
But now I'm going to deglaze
it. I need to do anything to do with fondue?
No. Fondue is completely different. But they do sound a great deal alike, sir. You're absolutely right. And if you have this happen on fondue, you're screwed too, because you wouldn't want that. So I put a little cream in here because
that's
also
illegal
here.
What did you just put
here?
In there?
Cream.
So busy. What?
Cream. Whipping cream.
A whole bottle?
No. I didn't use a whole bottle. I did not use a whole bottle.
What did you use?
I used 4 ounces.
All right, so now...
4 ounces.
Are you designing this to put back the 50 pounds in one meal?
No, because I'm not going to eat all of it.
Am I going to eat some of it?
You're going to eat some of it, and
so
we'll give some to the crew.
25 pounds a piece? I don't need that.
No, you won't gain it all at once.
So... 50 pounds. You took 50 pounds off. Uh-oh.
It's fine. Everything's good.
So
We're good. I
talking
remember.
In the kitchen and cooking
yes.
is risky, isn't it? In that your attention is taken off.
If you don't set a timer, yeah.
Well, that's what
and I
mean.
Didn't set a timer.
No, but you opened the oven take a look.
I got to look.
Now, but you cooled it off.
Well, a little
Is that
bit.
A problem?
It's not the best thing in the world to do. It's not. It's true. It's not the best thing to do. Opening the oven door is not a good thing. It's why I refuse to baste a turkey, because I don't want to open the door to... Oh, you don't like that.
Well, I don't know. Everybody says open and baste every 20 minutes.
No, I never baste a turkey.
So
what does basting do? What do you think basting actually does?
I think it the skin gets real crispy. No? No. Why are you at a loss
for
words?
I'm at a loss for words because... I'm not. I'm simply trying to choose them properly. Look, skin is meant to keep things out, right?
Skin is meant to keep things out.
That's what it's here for. It's to
keep
stuff out.
Or keep things in.
good. But in the case of basting, we're putting something on the outside.
Okay.
So all that basting can really do is, one, it can change the temperature of the turkey, because you're, by putting water on the outside of the turkey, as the water evaporates, it actually removes heat from the turkey, which slows down the cooking of the turkey. I don't want to slow down the cooking of the turkey. It will flavor the skin. It will absolutely do that. But you don't have to baste repeatedly in order to get that. You don't, unless you're glazing it Asian style, which is a different thing. Like a duck l'orange, not a duck l'orange, but like a Peking duck. Which is a different thing, in which case you'd probably want to hang the turkey and dry it for a few days. It's a complicated kind of thing. But no, I don't baste. I don't do it. I throw that thing in there and I get it out an hour later and it's good. Our gravy is thickening up now because the starch and the flour is gelatinized.
I am just filled with this new information about taste, about... I don't know if
any of it's useful, by the way.
What?
Hopefully some of that information is
useful.
Well,
I mean...
You got a spoon around here?
Yes, try the other drawer.
Perfect. I'm not stealing this.
Basting is like mother's milk. I mean, it's basic. Everybody says, "Well, we got to baste a turkey." You're saying, "Don't baste a turkey." The bits on the bottom of the pan.
Fond.
You think that's sticking to the pan? You got to scrape it off and dump it out.
There's some cayenne in there.
There's cayenne in there. Here come the biscuits. And these athletic moves you make on one leg and all.
It's because I'm lazy.
That's not your grandmother's cooking with her.
No, she didn't. Leg. She didn't. She used her butt.
Oh, she used her butt.
Yeah, she used her butt. See, I overcooked these a little bit.
Meaning that's good.
I overcooked them. They're a little darker on top
because
than they
should
be.
Because we were busy talking.
I was jabbering.
Does that mean the oven is not?
No, your oven's good. Your oven's solid. Watch this though. We're going to cover them to allow the steam to soften the tops a bit.
Oh my gosh!
Just be patient. We'll
so
leave these alone for
people
now.
People don't know that. Right?
It's just a little thing. The internal steam is going to soften the outsides a little
bit. It's a major thing that the moisture, that you want your biscuits to be moist as well as high, that's the way to achieve it.
Are you ready to try this gravy?
I am so ready.
I'm going to bring you a spoonful.
You understand I haven't eaten all day in anticipation of this moment.
Great. No stress. Here, don't burn yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to let you do it because you're wearing black. And
right.
It's spicy.
It's steamy.
But remember, we're going to put it on biscuits.
There's a guy on television that goes like this. He goes like this. When it's good, you know.
Who does that?
Zimmer.
Oh, Andrew Zimmer does
Zimmer.
That?
Zimmer. He goes.
Oh. Are you friends? You friends with Andrew Zimmer?
No, I just watch the show. And every time something's good, he goes.
All right. This is for you.
This is delicious.
I'm going to get you a fork. So we're going to do this
now,
old
that
school.
That sausage itself wasn't that hot, right?
No.
Oh my God, look at that biscuit. Can I tell you that whenever I am in the South, I'll order biscuits and something or other?
Do you really?
Yeah, but not gravy because I've sort of dreaded that.
Well, there's a lot of reasons to dread gravy.
Right.
Hopefully this won't be one of them.
And how do you eat it? Like, pick the biscuit up? Or
No. You're going to eat this with a fork.
Okay.
Trust me on that. I'm going to get you a fork. We've already gone through all your spoons, so
how
we'll have to wash
it. Does this relate with flying an airplane? Because you fly
a lot of flying is understanding and dealing with barometric pressure, and barometric pressure definitely changes how a biscuit rises.
For goodness sakes! That was a perfect answer.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Now, I'm going to try this, and you're going to tell me what it's like.
I'm going to eat it, too. Can I have one, too? Can I dirty up another plate?
Absolutely. Or take some from mine.
These are very nice plates, by the way. I like these.
They come from Italy.
All the best plates do, you know.
Now.
Look at that. And you get the little steam out of it. Oh.
It's beautiful. That is a beautiful thing.
It is.
I'm going to wait for you.
No. Don't you dare. Go.
I'm not going to wait for you.
Nah, don't wait. Don't. I haven't eaten either, so I'm piling this on, and the whole crew's like, "Hey,
oh my
God. Hey, what the heck?" But you know what? That is so. It's because you guys
good.
Are crew, and you don't get to.
No, they don't eat because they're crew.
No, they've got craft service.
That's right.
They got like some.
We're performers, and we. Eat.
That's right. We. It's in the contract.
Oh my God!
Is it all right?
Oh.
It's not bad. I don't think.
It is.
Come here.
It is the best thing of its kind that I've ever tasted. How good is that?
I'll take it. I will take it.
Is it the best you've ever made?
No, I like Southern sausage better. This is California Whole Foods sausage. I like a lot more. I should have put more sage in it.
What is, sage?
Sage. That was the herb that I put in because I was trying to get more of a southern flavor.
Sage fright.
I wish I had a snare drum. I do. So we'll give the rest of the biscuits to the crew, but only if they perform their duties perfectly right. And on time.
And on time.
Yeah, that's the number one thing.
Flying. What got you into flying?
I'll be honest. I went on my first book tour. Sorry, I'm talking with food in my mouth. The summer after 9/11. I did 29 cities, all on one-way tickets. And I'm still sore from all the places they looked on me.
Oh, right.
Back then, right. It was terribly difficult to travel on one-way tickets. I would have to get to the airport 3 hours before the flight.
Oh, I know only too well.
And when it was over, I said, you know what? I'm going to learn how to fly airplanes so I don't have to put up with this. And I did.
That
was life. I did not want to put up with commercial air travel anymore.
You had, in your tour, your cities were booked fairly close. You didn't have to go 1,000 miles to the next gig.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, you know, book tour, yeah, sometimes. Sometimes they'd be cross-country. I mean, sometimes they just depended on how things were routed. Of course, when you do your live show, you fly.
Yeah.
Don't you see? I ride a bus. My live tour, I ride the bus.
But that means they would have your booked fairly close together.
They would try, yeah. They would try.
So you took up flying.
I did.
For the practicality of it.
You like your biscuit. I'm glad. Yes. I wanted the independence. I wanted the independence.
You wanted the independence. Did you get
then
to,
I just got
did
obsessed.
You get to the joy of flying?
Mm.
Did you get to the
oh yeah.
To the ecstasy of flying?
Yes. Absolutely. What about you?
I fly. I have a private license.
Mm-hmm.
I took up soaring. Have you done any soaring?
I haven't. I was too busy chasing my instrument ticket and
you know, instrument? Dual. I never got.
It's very hard to use flying as a practical travel tool if you're not instrument rated. Right. And it really helps to have a commercial
nowadays,
rating as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But no, I've never been in a glider in my life.
And a glider is really where it's at. I'm doing helicopter lessons.
How's it going? Very different.
Hovering is a dance step, and it's got to be learned. It's so delicate.
And everything's, you know, in a different place. You know, your collective, you know, everything's just, it's odd.
You're using your feet, two hands, all the
time. Can you imagine doing that while being shot at? Well, you probably can.
Well, everything like that comes down to being at one with.
And not thinking about anything else.
And not thinking about where my left hand or my right hand is. Like a pianist playing the piano. He's not thinking where his fingers are going. He's listening to himself with the music and getting into the music. Are you like that as a chef?
I'm like that as a cook.
What's the difference?
Well, for me, chef is the most overused and abused word
Tell
in
me
the
about
English
that. I never know
culinary
what
language.
To use.
Okay, here's the deal.
One seems word cheaper chef, than the other. A cook doesn't seem to make as much money.
And
as
yet, does. You ask the greatest French chef that owns a restaurant with 3 Michelin stars, what are you for a living? He'll say, I'm a cook. To me, the code that I use is this. The word chef can be used in 3 ways. 1, it is a position that you are employed to perform.
Mm-hmm.
You are the chef at Shea Shatner.
Right.
Okay, it's a job. It is a description. It is there's an actual job description that says chef at the top. I am the chef at. Then it is a term of respect used amongst peers.
You mean you to another guy?
Me to another, or you know, anybody within the culinary community, if you really respect somebody, calling them chef is a really nice way to show it.
So is it Chef Anton or Chef
Alton? No, I don't use the word chef. No one calls me chef.
Would you use the first name or the last name?
Oh, chef no, you just say chef. You just say chef. Hey, chef. Thank you, chef. Oh. Yes, chef. Okay, chef. Nice seeing you, chef.
Like maestro and coach.
Yes, but amongst in the community, that's a sign of respect.
Uh-huh.
It can also be used as a sign of disrespect. For instance, when given an order by somebody who thinks they're a little better than they actually are, you might just say, "Oui, chef," or "Yes, chef," which actually means, and it's very important to be able to differentiate between the two.
Wow.
Generally, this comes from someone who has decided to call themselves chef, even though they're really just a cook. And people do that a lot.
It sounds very
chef.
Sounds very French.
Well, it all comes out of the brigade system in France, yeah. But it's a word that everybody now, you know, people go to culinary school for 6 months, then come out and they say, I'm a chef. Like, no, actually, you're going to peel potatoes. Shut up and go in there. Chef, you know? So for those of us that are in the industry, chef is one of those things that it's a very, very picky little term. Yeah, but if you are actually employed as a chef, if your business card says chef at blah, 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 chef.
But the word cook then is not a denigration.
It is the best possible word when you say I am a cook. Because you know what? That keeps in mind a lot of things. If you're a cook, and I'm a cook, and most of the people I work with are cooks, you serve people. Part of being a cook is I made this food. But the joy of this was actually you eating the food. I was serving you.
You gave me a joyful experience.
And that is cooking. That's not chefing. Chefing's got nothing to do with that. Chefing's got to do with me in here yelling at my assistant Jamie to do something. That's not it. But a cook serves and is humbled by that experience and the sharing of that. Now, are we going to drink something now?
You and I
put all that cayenne in there for a reason,
you and
my
I
friend.
Are going to. I can't do that. I don't know how I'm going to do this. Here.
Can I assist with the foil? Happy to.
I don't want you to see the name of the.
Oh, I'm not going
to. I'm the whole idea.
I can do it with my eyes closed.
Because brown bag wine tasting is.
I'll put the brown bag on my head. Actually, it won't fit. Oh, I finally have a tall hat. I finally have a tall hat.
Hang on.
I will simply.
I got it. I got a. You know, I find that these effervescent bottles of water.
Yes, sir.
That you have to take the top off. Is a test as to whether you're getting old or not. At a certain point of age, you can't twist the top off.
And so quit drinking the stuff.
Yeah, but I mean.
It's very simple.
All right, are you ready?
Yeah.
Give me the brown bag back. Close your eyes, I gotta get this in here. Okay.
I see nothing.
I know nothing.
Okay. I gotta turn your oven off though, I do know that.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Ah. The sound.
Of civilization.
Right, and what goes better with sausage and gravy? And biscuits than whatever this is. Now,
okay.
This is brown bag wine tasting.
Okay.
Whoops. Now, chef.
Yeah. No, cook. Call me either Alton or cook or hey you. It's.
I'm not pouring this correctly, am I? But the brown bag is.
But you pour beer very well, and you pour that like.
Okay,
there you go. I'm not. We can just drink it out of the bottle. I got no. I'm going to get your. Would you like another biscuit, by the way?
Yes.
I'm happy to get that for you, sir. One less for the crew.
Just a little. I'm afraid of the calories. Give me the top half. You take the bottom half. I don't mean to phrase it that way exactly.
No. All my life, I've hoped that you and I could be in a place where you would say that. So you take
all
the
right.
top half, and I'll take the bottom half.
Right. Now.
We could so party together.
I know. Here. I want a toast. To you, chef.
To you, sir.
And a gorgeous meal that you've made me. I now
You're
present
welcome.
You with
right.
some something bubbly, okay?
Yes.
And I want you to taste the wine, and I want you to describe it in cooking terms, that you would use if you were making a meal.
Okay? Yep.
So I don't want to hear vanilla and tobacco and overtones.
Okay.
I want to hear chef things.
Okay. Chef stuff. Because chefs sometimes say that stuff too.
Okay.
It's got bubbles in it. It's a method champenoise. A method champenoise. I don't know that it's champagne. I think it's champagne. I think it's actual champagne.
Your palate is educated in the wine as well?
I could buy. I can impress a girl. Who laughed? I heard somebody laugh. You're fired.
Nobody laughed.
Okay, so you're looking for chefy. You want food words.
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna do this.
Lard or butter? I mean, is this?
No, I'm gonna do this in as few words as possible. I'm going to put together a mosaic, if you will.
Cappuccino. Be quiet. Hold on a second. Good. She's
Cappuccino.
So matchy. Yeah, there's three Dobermans out
there. Yeah, I know. But what are their names? Cappuccino.
Starbuck is the father.
Can you actually use that term without paying rights?
Okay.
Cappuccino is one of his daughters, and a very close relative is Espresso.
Got it. Was Starbucks named after the Moby Dick character or
That's
after
right.
the coffee?
That's okay. right.
I'm going to say, to make this, we will take 3 tablespoons of butter. We will crush up 1 tablespoon of Butterfinger bar.
Wow.
Okay, just work with me.
Hold on.
No, I didn't say lard. I said butter.
Okay.
Butter and a Butterfinger candy bar. Small piece of Butterfinger candy bar.
Right. That's rich.
An Amalfi lemon, peel only, from the side of the lemon facing south.
That is very rich. That's got the most sun in it, and it has.
But the acid is rounder.
The acid is rounder. The zest is. It's very zestful.
The zest, and then we're going to add some greenery. Fresh yard clippings.
Fresh yard
grass
from grass.
Grass from a hay field, second cut. So after August.
No manure.
Yeah, there have been cows in that field. But they got into an onion patch before they came over into this pasture.
So the cow pies have a certain
astringency, and a fragrance of the Allium family.
Right, is in there. Have still. They risen or are they flat?
They're flat. Okay. No rising. And can I have a little more?
Yes. In addition to all this, I need you to give me a wine magazine rating. You know, like 85 to 95 or something like that.
Okay, so we're going like with the Parker system. Is that how we're going to play this?
If I knew, I'm going to immediately
kind of
say yes.
Yes, just do. Okay, just say, or say no, not him.
Parker, I admire him.
You had dinner last week probably.
At Parker's.
Shea Parker's. Yeah, Shea Parker's. I'm still not sure where it's from.
Wow. Is it French or American?
I think it's American, made by a French house.
You've split the middle there too closely.
I'm sorry. I think these are California grapes,
well,
but I think they're made
all
by.
All California grapes are French.
No, all French grapes are Californian.
Well, I know that, but I was. Yes.
I'm telling you that this was made by a French house in America. I don't know who. I have no idea who, but
French
I'm willing.
French house in America.
Well, a French champagne maker, French. Vintner
but
in America.
Vintner, because you can't say champagne unless it comes from champagne.
Okay, so that's why I said it's a method champagne. Right, it's not. I do not believe this is champagne.
Okay.
I could be completely wrong.
No,
cook.
There's nothing wrong. It's all actually very beautiful.
There's a little bit of herb that's besides the grass, I would have to throw in.
Thistle?
No, spice.
Thistle.
No, spice. How about 1 green cardamom pod?
Cardamom. Yeah. At the very end, there's a cardamom.
A little kick in the back. Yeah. Green cardamom, not black.
Ah.
That's all I got to say about that.
Give me a number.
Okay, you want it between 80 and 90? Or is it
85, 95.
I'm going to give it an 89. I'm giving it an 89. Am I going to be escorted?
Sommelier.
I'm going to be escorted
Michael
from
Horn.
The house, aren't I?
This is a Mum Napa.
Ha!
Brut Prestige, non-vintage, sparkling wine. It's not champagne.
No.
Sparkling wine of Mum Napa. Creamy texture, elegant
French
white
house.
Blossom.
Down cappuccino.
Aromas, bright citrus and red berry flavors.
I didn't get the red
with
berry.
With cow dung overtones. That is amazing.
But only cows that have been in an onion field.
Pairs Napa Valley grapes with the French wine technique of champagne. I don't believe it. And the number? Give me the number.
I gave you 89.
You got an 89 and it's 89, a 90.
It's a 90.
And here it is. Mom's up.
It's Mom. Okay.
Did you see the bottle you
No.
That's too good. You were too good.
No, but I wouldn't have guessed Mom. I would have gone it's not typically what? That's not but there's not toast in there. There's not a piece of toast in it. If there had been a piece of toast, I would have maybe gone for Schramsberg. Eat your biscuit.
I'm going to eat it.
This is actually, now you come do the pairing. How is this wine with that biscuit and gravy? Because I think it's pretty good.
This is hugely spicy.
Well, I put a lot of cayenne in there.
No, no, that's good. Hugely spicy is good.
Okay.
Now, what then goes with hugely spicy? A subtle, creamy sweetness, or do you want spicy wine?
I want some strength. I want there to be point counterpoint. I don't think it's like, okay, here's the spice, here's the coolness. Because then if you eat the spicy and then you drink something that doesn't have any nuts to it, it just cancels it out. Might as well be water. This has got it. Because
this is the perfect pairing.
I think it's pretty good. I think if it had been something like a Schnauzer where it had a little toastiness in it, that would have not been a bad thing. So we'll just simply marinate this in some Pepperidge Farm croutons and then we'll have it.
How are you feeling about what you've got? How long have we been at this?
I don't know how long we've been at this.
Almost an hour, so.
Hey, for my podcast, this is pretty awesome. I can pretty much retire now.
While I have you guys here, can I have you do an intro and outro for Mothers I'd Like to Feed and also an intro for Brown Bag Wine Tasting?
Okay. Mothers I'd Like to Feed, which I think is just about the most brilliant thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
So we're going to just do an intro and outro and then coming up.
All right, so.
Whenever you're ready.
All you, sir.
Hang on, one at a time. The first thing is, Mothers I'd Like to Feed. All right.
Andy, is that two camera?
That is two camera.
Two camera.
Am I clear?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Mothers I'd Like to Feed. What could be more natural than finding a great chef, cook, and asking them about themselves and especially a recipe that they learned at their home when they first began to understand what good food was. Or the very opposite, what they learned was really bad food at home and they sought to avoid it. Mothers I'd Like to Feed. Me talking to chefs while they cook their best dish that they learned at home, and we talk and we eat and we all have fun.
Thank you. And let's do a tease. So today on Mothers I'd Like to Feed.
Say again.
A tease, please. So today on Mothers I'd Like to Feed.
We have...
That's a little premature, isn't it? Today on Mothers I'd Like to Feed, the great chef, Alton Brown.
Perfect, thank you. Coming up, and then we'll put a clip.
Oh, this is ridiculous. We haven't even sold the show.
Well...
Got to be prepared.
Coming up, Mothers I'd Like to Feed.
And a close, and you're great.
Well, that's Alton Brown, who is as brilliant off-screen as he is on-screen. You can learn to love Alton Brown. I did. Okay.
Thank you.
Next is Brown Bag Wine Tasting.
Intro for Brown Bag Wine Tasting.
Now on Brown Bag Wine Tasting, Alton Brown and wine and food, but especially Alton Brown.
Can I have a close with both of you? Just sort of cheering each other and...
Cheersing each other.
Cheersing.
Yeah, I have to have a little bit more of that, though. Don't I? I drink, Mr. Shatner. I don't mess around with this stuff. It doesn't matter what you pour. I'm going to want to drink it.
Yeah,
thank you, sir.
But you're analyzing so brilliantly.
Well, it's yeah, but now I'm just drinking it.
It's almost unbelievable, actually.
Well, no, because it isn't, because all you have to do is be familiar with a couple of styles and be able to taste some basic grape things. These are not French grapes. You want to know how I knew that?
With onion.
That it was a French maker?
How?
Lack of secondary malolactic fermentation, if I may say that. I mean, that does not smack of UC Davis winemaking.
Wait a minute. Lack of secondary?
Secondary malolactic fermentation.
Wait a minute. Malolection?
Malolactic.
Malolactic.
It's apples, green apples.
Yes.
With green apple flavor that a lot of California winemakers, especially in California Chardonnays, put their wines through in order to deepen that Granny Smith flavor.
What does that mean, put their wines through? How do they do that?
It is a secondary fermentation specifically to create malolactic acid.
So, well, how do they get that? Yes.
How do I explain that quickly?
Don't do it quickly.
Don't do it quickly.
Just do it so I understand.
Let's put it this way. It is doing
unless,
a second...
Unless you don't know.
No, well, I'm not a winemaker. But when a lot of California wines are really, their hallmark is that they're not made in the grape. They're not made on the vine or in the dirt. They're made afterwards. They're like, just give us the juice and we'll make wine. And that was very much a kind of a mindset that came out of UC Davis, which is where a lot of these winemakers went.
Oh, really?
And the whole idea of using science to create the wine, whereas in France, you use terroir, use the dirt and the drainage and the sun and the wind to make the wine. All you do is let it go.
How does the mechanics work as against the natural process?
Well, it's not so much that they're... A lot of it has to do with how you age the wine, how you hold the wine. California, a lot of California wines are kept in. They're still done in stainless steel very often. And the fermentations can be adjusted and changed the way that the yeasts that are used, the way that they're fed, the amount of oxygen that they're allowed in order to create a very specific flavor profile in that wine.
Wow.
Now, in some place like most of France, it's we're going to squeeze this grape the way we've squeezed this grape for the last gajillion years. We're going to stick it in this barrel, or we're going to stick it in this plastic vat for a while, and then we're going to move it into this barrel the way that we always have. And whatever is in that grape is there. The molds that were on the outside, the yeast strains that we've been using
forever.
That sounds
more admirable than the mechanics. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's just two different schools of thought. You know, they're both making wine.
Yes, but which makes the better wine?
Just different. I think they're different.
Well, but to your palate, do you have...
I prefer terroir. I prefer the taste of dirt.
Is it because it is the taste of dirt? Can you be fooled? Could you?
Of course I could be fooled, but I guess maybe I like the romance or the idea that on a year-to-year basis, depending on how much the sun shined, what the average mean temperatures are, you know, all these little bitty variables that went into growing the grape were the things that actually controlled the wine, so not somebody making it after
It's an interesting American-French way of thinking, isn't it?
I think there are a lot more American makers that are thinking like the French.
Oh, really?
Now, but there was an entire culture. If it hadn't have been for this culture of making the wine, we never would have been able to compete with the French. We never would have been able to.
What an interesting subject that is, the difference in mentality. And I imagine there are French people who make it mechanically as well, so that there's
some interchange there, but they're very proud about maintaining that terroir. And we have terroir too. I mean,
I was at a vineyard not so long ago where the 1 acre was different from another acre.
Sure.
Right? The contiguous acres.
But the way the American wine market very often works is that to be financially feasible, say that you and I own X vineyard up here, and that hill is like this, and that hill's like this, we still need to be able to put all this stuff together into one vintage. We've got our label, and we need 16,000 cases. So we don't have time to trick around with, that hill is different than this hill.
Right.
A lot of guys in France who are working on much smaller plots will actually bottle that one differently than they might bottle this one differently over here.
And there's a distinct difference.
I can't always taste it. You got to really know what you're doing.
The cow pie has onions or doesn't have onions.
Well, luckily, cows don't usually walk around in grape vineyards too much, which is good.
Alden, thank you. That was beautiful. Just a great hour. I just loved it.